Hey everyone, and welcome to Have Disability, Will Travel, a podcast from the Accessible Travel Forum. This podcast takes us around the world so we can talk to people in the accessible travel industry. Influencers, nonprofits, travel companies, and people like you and me who don't let a disability get in the way of a great vacation. My name is Josh, and I'm glad you're along for the ride. So grab your passport and let's get going. In this episode, we talk with Carrie Ann Lightly. Carrie Ann has been working in the accessible travel industry since she was 18 years old and has worn many different hats. She currently works in marketing for Access Able, an organization that aims to create incredibly thorough access guides to any place you might want to go in the UK. But let's hear it in Carrie Ann's words. Hi, Carrie Ann. How are you today?
Hello, Josh. I'm good, thank you.
I understand it's in the morning there, so you're having a cup of coffee.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Vital for it's evening here in Japan, so I'm enjoying a glass of wine, which is sort of a reoccurring theme in all these podcasts. I have to be careful I don't indulge too much. So, but yeah, we've interacted a number of times through Twitter and in different Facebook groups and stuff like that. So, but this is actually the first time we've ever really talked to each other. So I'm quite excited about that.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, so first of all, well, this is a podcast about accessible travel, so I guess everybody has to give their credentials. So I understand you're disabled. Can you tell us a bit about that and how it affects you?
Absolutely, yeah. So I have cerebral palsy. I am a wheelchair user. It affects mainly my legs, and I'm quite sort of... I'm lucky enough to be quite flexible and independent outside of my wheelchair if I need to. So I can transfer to another seat or into a vehicle or something like that. And I can even manage the odd stair and step if that's inside a property.
Right. So is that a power wheelchair or is it a manual wheelchair?
I actually have a manual wheelchair with a power pack. So it's a bit of both. Okay. So it's a rigid frame manual chair and it has a light drive power pack that attaches and detaches. Okay. And I also use a free wheel on the front of the chair as well, just to help the manual wheels deal with the extra speed. But I find it's the best option for me. It's the most flexible option for me because it allows travel with a power pack, even in, you know, smaller vehicles and that sort of thing, because it all breaks down.
Okay, yeah, I'm in a very big power wheelchair, so that getting into going up steps and getting lifted anywhere is pretty much out of the question. But I travel quite a bit by the power chair, so I need the extra battery power, I guess. But
yeah, no, I used to have a large power chair that was supplied by the NHS in this country, and it just didn't allow me the flexibility that I needed, really.
Right.
As well as not kind of being supportive enough posturally. It wasn't really the right size for me and things like that. So a couple of years ago I did some fundraising, some crowdfunding and some fundraising events, and managed to raise enough funds for this wheelchair, which does work really well. As I say, it all breaks down into quite small components and it's all fairly lightweight and easy to pick up, so it means that we can go anywhere with it, really, which is good.
Well, that leads in perfectly to the next question about travel, because that's the other part of the accessible travel. Can you tell us a little bit maybe about your first travel experience that you remember?
Yeah, I travelled quite a lot with my family when I was younger. So with my parents and also my grandparents. My memories are that really, you know, there wasn't really such thing as an adapted or an accessible room in a standard hotel back in those days. We'd go to the typical holiday resorts that a lot of people travel to from the UK. So it would be European places, you know, Spain. I was lucky enough to go to Florida once with my grandparents and do the whole Disney thing.
Oh, sorry.
But, sorry.
Oh, did you Did you enjoy travel at the first part, or did you gradually start to like it?
No, absolutely. I did. I very much enjoyed it. But I think my lasting memory from my early travels is that we just kind of made do with the facilities that we found.
Right.
I don't remember it particularly being a struggle. I guess it's easier when you're a small child and you're easily picked up and, you know, all of that sort of thing. Mm. So I think my first experience really of what I would call truly accessible travel was when I was 18 years old, when I started working in the field, and I went to London to meet one of the hotels that my employers worked with, and, you know, got a tour of these accessible rooms that had ceiling track hoists and profiling beds and, you know, all the standard kind of wheeling shower and that sort of thing. And I'd never seen anything like it before. So it really was quite a revelation, really.
Okay. So if you've traveled a lot around the world, I guess, or maybe some of the places you want to brag about that you've been to.
I don't know. I've done quite a lot of travel. Not too many exotic destinations. I guess my favourite exotic place was Cancun in Mexico. That was our honeymoon destination six years ago. And I found that was very good for accessibility because, you know, you get a lot of the American standards over there, I guess.
Okay.
But really, in latter years, I've fell in love with a European city break, you know, with just having a really short trip, packing a lot into a small space of time, and really trying to travel like a local and see everything on the ground. And I think my kind of favorite one of those was probably Rome. So within those kind of destinations, I've been to Rome, I've been to Barcelona, Parma in Mallorca, a couple of other places in Italy as well, so Florence, Pisa and Lucca, and I think I definitely want to do some more exploring of that kind of nature. It's really how I like to travel. I don't find it very relaxing. I think I come home and feel maybe just as exhausted as before I went on holiday. But I think, you know, you get so many memories and so many experiences from traveling in that way, and that's really what I want to do more of.
Right. Now, speaking of experiences, then I'm sure you've had some good experiences, but also you've maybe had some bad experiences. Are there any that you could share that just things went horribly wrong?
Yeah. I mean, I've found traveling to countries sort of, I guess, outside of that European aspect. So places like Egypt or Tunisia, and even Turkey to some extent. There's intentions in terms of accessibility. They are trying, but they just don't really get it.
Oh.
So I think in both Turkey and Tunisia, actually, you know, the resorts that we were staying in, they all had ramps, but the ramps were actually so steep that they might as well have just been steps for you know, how useful they were to me. And, you know, I still needed a pusher to get me up and down them. So I think, you know, from an infrastructure perspective, like I say, the intention is there. But I guess, you know, things aren't regulated like they are in this country and other European countries and even in the US. You know, I know we have quite strict rules in terms of ramp gradients and those sorts of things. I found that didn't really exist. I mean, it's one of those things. I'm the kind of person, I have the kind of attitude, I'll always make the best of you know, anything I encounter on holiday. Because, you know, you're still on holiday at the end of the day. I guess I was brought up and taught to, you know, we can always find a way. We can always find a way around it. But, you know, it does kind of, I guess, put you off going back to those kind of destinations again.
Right. Okay. So just kind of transitioning here into your work life. And apparently it's, you know, it's not really that different than your hobbies of traveling. I understand that you start working in the travel industry from 18 at a place called Tourism for All.
Yeah, that's right.
Can you tell us a little bit about what that organization does?
Yeah, absolutely. So Tourism for All is a small charity that supports disabled people in finding information about accessible holiday and travel destinations or equipment. It could be anything from, you know, locating a suitable hotel to locating some wheelchair hire, maybe supporting with, you know, financial help. Information, all sorts of different queries, and that's operated by Helpline Support, and they also work with accessible tourism businesses to help them promote their accessibility and also provide staff training. So yeah, I worked at Tourism for 13 years, and I guess that was probably where I discovered my love of travel. It had always been something I'd enjoyed, but I actively started kind of building more travel into my life and making my life more about travel, I guess, from starting working there, really.
What was your job there, your job position? Did it change over the 13 years?
Yeah. So I ended up, I guess, information service manager, which was pretty all-encompassing, to be honest, right. Because it was and still is a small organisation. I found myself wearing lots of different hats throughout the day, really. I think it's quite difficult to describe the role in a nutshell, but it could have been anything from, you know, taking those phone calls on the helpline to, you know, going to meet with businesses to get them signed up as partners, or, you know, marketing, social media, website development. So lots and lots of things going on there. Yeah.
So that's really great. Sorry, my Japanese came out there for a second. Okay, so you've just transitioned though, and you're now at AccessAble, or is it Accessable?
Yeah,
how do you pronounce it?
AccessAble, yeah. Okay. AccessAble, that's right. So I joined in June this year.
Oh, so just a couple months ago then.
Yeah.
Okay, can you tell us a little bit about that organization, what you guys do? And
Yeah, of course. So AccessAble is the new name for Disabled Go. We used to be called Disabled Go, and we were Disabled Go for 18 years. And what we do is we supply accessibility guides, so accessibility information about public buildings, businesses, venues, really anywhere where an individual might want to visit within the UK. So it could be anything from a hospital to maybe a hotel or a restaurant, a university. We have, you know, football stadiums. We have many different businesses and different sectors that we cover. And each organisation that we cover on the website has been visited and assessed by a trained surveyor, crucially. Okay. So we don't give information about somewhere that we haven't visited.
And it's not up to the business that says, oh, we're fine or we're accessible.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's crucially, that's another way that we sort of don't operate. We don't rate places. We don't say that accessibility is good or accessibility is bad in a particular venue, because we recognise that everybody who uses our information and accessibility guides has different needs and wants and requirements. So, right. Everybody's an individual. We know that, you know, even two people with the same medical condition, like you and I, for instance, will have very different requirements. So we report the facts, figures, and photographs. It's very, very detailed information.
Okay.
Covers, you know, everything from kind of hearing loops to parking, walking distances, accessible toilets, lighting levels, lots and lots of different information. And we've just recently rebranded, so we've relaunched as AccessAble. We've launched a new website. We've also launched a mobile phone app, which we're really excited about. What we're trying to do with this app is really to give some element of spontaneity back. You know, we recognise that a lot of life, I guess, as a disabled person is about, you know, pre-planning and forward planning, and it's very difficult to just get up and go and feel spontaneous. And, you know, with this app, it will give the ability to find information on the go, It will give the ability to create an account and save your accessibility requirements. That can be done both on the website and on the app, so that each time you search, it will be filtered by your individual requirements.
Oh,
and as well with the app, you'll have the ability to save guides and use them offline.
Okay.
So it won't be dependent on an internet or data connection.
Right. How are you guys funded then? Is that from through the government, or do you have partnerships?
So we're funded by our clients, essentially, by our partners, who are the businesses that we go and survey. So we work in four different sectors. We work with healthcare, so with the NHS in this country. We work with education, universities and colleges. We work with local authorities, and local councils in different areas. And we work with the private sector. Private sector, it's generally sort of large retail chains. So we work with Marks and Spencer, for instance. Hotel chains. So we work with Kew Green, who cover a lot of the Holiday Inn hotels in this country. And we also work with the Premier League for football stadium.
Oh, wow.
And lots of other different private sector businesses. I am still fairly new, so I'm still learning how broad our client base is.
Right. So are you going to be wearing a lot of hats there, or do you have a more clear job description?
So I'm marketing manager. It is a bit more kind of strategic and straightforward than my previous role. So I'm predominantly looking at, like, I guess, all things marketing, really. So, you know, social media, website, creating kind of marketing collateral and marketing materials. So we've just brought out a load of new kind of pens and leaflets and mugs and key rings, all branded with our new branding. Helping to support our partnerships team in organising, you know, launch events and promoting on the back of those, and many other sort of marketing aspects, really. But I'm really enjoying it so far. It's been a big change. It's definitely a very different culture to my previous job, but definitely something that I feel like I'm thriving in. So very happy.
Well, you're doing a good job marketing, because you've already got yourself onto a podcast here in Japan.
Absolutely.
I guess you're probably quite busy right now, so you haven't had a chance to do it lately, but I know that you also did a lot of freelance writing on travel and accessible travel in particular. Can you tell us some of the places you've written for?
Yeah, of course. I regularly write for Disability Horizons, disability magazine website in this country. That is something that I'm going to be picking up again very shortly. I've had a little break from that whilst job changes and things have been happening, but you'll see some more articles from me on there very soon. I've also written for The Guardian. I've written for TripAdvisor. I've written accessible travel guides for TripAdvisor.
Oh, wow.
And I've written for HuffPost as well.
Okay. Actually, I was reading one of your pieces on the HuffPost, and you talk about the stress and anxiety of planning for when you travel with a disability. And a number of times I kept saying, yes, that's so true. Do you feel that in a lot of times in the accessible travel industry, a lot of people focus on, you know, a lot of the details, but they don't necessarily address the fact of some of the extra stress and anxiety that comes with planning?
Yeah, I think absolutely that's an element. And I think there is the kind of potential pitfall, I guess, for people to look at accommodating people's medical conditions as you know, singular things. So I'm a wheelchair user, so that's what they've got to accommodate. You know, this person might have a learning disability, so that's what they've got to accommodate. And I think actually looking at it from a human perspective and going, you know, well, this person actually could also be suffering with serious anxiety. And you know, how do we alleviate that? And actually, are the measures that we're putting in place to make things accessible for their wheelchair actually making things worse from an anxiety perspective? You know, I think that travel, particularly as a wheelchair user, naturally there are a lot of elements of it that, that will make you anxious, because I think, you know, if you're traveling by air, or if you're traveling to a different country, there are a lot of unknowns. You can spend months and months and months planning, and I frequently do. But you can't cover everything. You can't 100% guarantee that everything you're going to come across is going to be as you've planned, or is going to be suitable for you. Right. I think the major anxiety is obviously, you know, traveling by air with a wheelchair and the potential damage that could happen to your wheelchair, and, you know, not knowing that until you get off your flight at the other end.
Oh yeah.
And I think, you know, there are a lot of great people campaigning the aviation industry and really trying to make a huge difference there. And I hope that we will see some change coming. But, you know, I think it doesn't get spoken about enough, really. Though travel for me is actually something that broadens my horizons and builds my confidence, and, you know, I think there's nothing more powerful than getting outside of your comfort zone. I think that's so good for a person. But actually, to get there, it can be an incredibly difficult thing mentally. You do have to be very brave. And you really do have to, you know, push yourself but I guess put some faith in the unknown, and it's not always an easy thing to do when you have a particular set of requirements.
Is there anything, do you think, that I'm sure there's no one easy answer, but for people in the accessible travel industry or the travel industry in general, that could be done to start to address that issue? For example, maybe being preemptive about talking to people about, you know, are there any concerns that you have or something like that? Or
yeah, ideas? I think it really is just treat everybody as an individual. Just, you know, one of the things that I've said for many years is that really, you know, accessible travel and looking after your disabled customer as well, it's just good customer service. It's not actually anything different or anything special than looking after the rest of your customers. You know, it's about treating everybody as an individual and taking the time to speak with them and, you know, find out what you can do to help them and what you can do to make them feel better. I think, you know, it's not a magic wand. It's never, you know, it's going to be impossible to fix everything in one go. And you know, it's and I think accessible travel is never going to be perfect. I would love it if it was, but then I guess all of us might be out of a job if it was as well. So, you know, I think we do have to have a certain element of just perseverance from our point of view. But I think from an industry perspective, it is just, you know, we're all just human beings. We're all just individuals, and we just need to mutually treat each other with respect and kindness.
Do you have any personal things that you do before? For example, maybe you mentioned you plan a lot, and that sort of probably will help, I guess, help you with any anxieties that you at least know what's coming. But do you have anything else? For example, maybe you books or music or relaxing, I think?
Yeah. So I read a lot when I travel. It's probably the time that I read most in my life. I guess like a lot of people, it's you find yourself with time to do it when you're away from home and you're not working and things. So that's something that I do quite a lot. I do a huge amount of planning. I always try and travel with a guidebook. Not usually specifically an accessible guidebook, to be honest, but just something where I can really sit and read and learn about a destination and try and work out what I want to see and what I want to do. Supplement that with my own accessibility research, I guess. And I, you know, from a perspective of, you know, things like equipment, so looking after my wheelchair and that sort of thing, I'll just do everything I can to protect it. You know, right. I travel with my power pack. I have a huge, very sturdy hard shell suitcase that I cover in fragile stickers and wheelchair stickers, and it all gets packed in there and wrapped up in protection. And I think, you know, to some extent, you then know that you've done everything you can. But there is still that unknown factor.
Right, yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to head back to your home country now. Now, you're on your TV star as well. You're on an ITV program about accessible travel, and in particular about trains in the UK. Can you just sort of tell a little bit about what some of the challenges are of riding the train in the UK are for a disabled rider?
Yeah, so I travel by train a huge amount, pretty much weekly for work at the moment. Right. And I think the main things that are challenges or issues is that we have to, in this country, pre-book any assistance that we need on the train. It's either 24 or 48 hours in advance. Some of the train companies have different rules, but essentially, you know, it has to be pre-booked. So again, the spontaneity element is really difficult. Now, I'm a planner, so that doesn't much bother me. I don't mind doing that and knowing which train I'm getting on and things. But then what about when life happens and when things get in the way and when, you know, meetings overrun or you get stuck in a traffic jam or you have an emergency and you have to get home quickly? Right. That's when I find the system really falls down, because, you know, it's impossible to pre-book in those instances. And then that anxiety element comes back again, because it's, you know, am I going to be able to get on the train, or is somebody going to get me off at the other end? Because, you know, the station's told me that they'll pull through to my destination and tell them, but has that actually happened? So I think that's kind of the major issue, is the availability and reliability.
Are those trains between cities then, or they're sort of within the city, or
I guess it depends where you are and what mode of transport you're traveling on. So I know, for instance, in London, traveling by tube, traveling by underground, you don't have to pre-book. You can just turn up and go. It's not something I do a huge amount, so I don't know in practice how that works. But I tend to travel fairly long distances, so between cities or between counties.
Right.
I will say that my home station are incredibly good. I think that comes from the benefit of it being quite small and there only being a few members of staff, so they all know me very well. And they all say, you know, good morning, Carrie-Anne, the ramp's down there, we'll see you in a minute. You know, and I know when I'm leaving or when I'm arriving back to that station that that's going to work very well. But for instance, you know, I can go to maybe Manchester and travel on the tram network there, on the metro, and that's all completely step free. So I don't need any assistance from anybody. I don't need to pre-book it. It's, you know, you go straight off the platform onto the tram, level access, and it works brilliantly. And it's such a nice feeling, actually, just getting on the mode of transport exactly the same way as everybody else.
Oh, yeah. So if you don't book in advance, are you turned down at the gate, or is it just that, well, we'll try, but we can't guarantee anything?
Yeah, I think it's more, you know, we'll try and we'll do our best, but we can't guarantee. I've never been turned away.
Right.
Again, I guess it depends on the size of the station, the amount of members of staff, and, you know, if they've got pre-bookings that they, so for instance, if they've got, you know, two wheelchair users to get off a train and me to get on at the same time, and there's only two members of staff, then, you know, is that going to work? I think, you know, generally otherwise, I find the train travel okay. I mean, I'll say, I went to 3-4 different destinations last week and I had no issues at all. You know, it all worked really well. And I think that's important to say, actually, because we don't often enough talk about when things are unremarkable and right. things just happen as they should do, you know. Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, the infrastructure in terms of the train facilities could improve. There's not enough space on them. Right. You quite often get surrounded by people's luggage and things because there's not enough space for people to stow their luggage safely. And we always hear tales of, you know, in fact, this did happen to me last week, being on the train. You get put in the carriage specifically where the accessible toilet is, and then halfway through the journey, the accessible toilet breaks and becomes out of order.
Oh, no.
And, you know, all of a sudden, you can't go to the toilet. Right. And, you know, this could be a 3 or 4 hour train journey. So it just, there are definitely issues. But like I say, I'm conscious that I've probably sounded very negative there. And actually, I do travel every week on the train. Mm-hmm. And for me personally, more often than not, it goes right more than it goes wrong.
Right. That's too bad. Okay. Sort of going, I guess, from a perspective of somebody who's visiting the UK, in terms of hotels, what percentage of places have accessible rooms now? You mentioned when you were younger that they didn't have really any sort of accessible rooms, but what's it like?
Yeah, I guess I couldn't tell you actual percentages. Because my job these days is kind of less ultimately travel focused, when we're at all different types of building and venue.
Right.
I'm a little bit out of the loop in terms of the stats these days. But I think, you know, it is improving. I think particularly with the you know, the chain hotels, so you places like Holiday Inns, your Premier Inns, your Travel Lodges, you know, there's a minimum expectation that there's going to be at least 1, 2, 3 accessible rooms. I tend to use those kinds of hotels when I'm traveling for work because, you know, they're low budget, they're easy, and
right.
For me, I know what I'm going to get. You know, once you've stayed in one, the facilities are generally the same across the board.
Yeah.
And that works quite well. But, you know, I recognise that it's different for everybody.
Are you able to book those online, or do you have to?
I always book online. I'm a big advocate of doing everything that I can as quickly and efficiently as I can, and not necessarily having to call up and, you know, block off rooms and things like that.
And they have an option to choose an accessible room when you book online?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
There may not be a huge amount of information about the facilities in that room itself,
right.
But then I guess that's where AccessAble comes in.
Okay, yeah.
You know, that's where, and what we try to do with companies that we work with is get them to deep link through to their accessibility guide on our website. So
okay.
If you're on a hotel's website or a train station's website, something like that, searching for accessibility information, then, you know, you can click through and land on the accessibility guide on the AccessAble site.
Great. Okay, what about tourist attractions? I know there's a lot of really places with a lot of history. And I guess that can be an issue with making accessibility. How do you feel the tourist attractions are in the UK?
Yeah, so from my perspective of, you know, my individual requirements, I actually think that from an attractions point of view, we do really well. I think there are challenges, but I don't know. In my opinion, I think there's almost kind of more expectation that an attraction will be accessible. You know, I would never consider, you know, going to like a zoo, for instance, and it not having an accessible toilet. I know there's issues with, you know, changing places, toilets, and toilets which are more accessible for mm-hmm. people who need those. And I do think that's a huge issue, and I applaud that campaign enormously. However, from the perspective of the facilities that I need, I don't tend to struggle in tourist attractions in this country at all.
Okay, even the cultural heritage ones?
Yeah, so, you know, I live in the Lake District, which
okay.
is generally not very accessible, probably viewed as not being very accessible.
Right.
I live in one of the larger towns, so I live in Kendal, and I think that's probably where it's a bit easier for me, because you get, you know, you go into the smaller villages and they are all very hilly. There's lots of cobbles on the pavements and things like that, and a lot of the shops and things have, you know, steps to get into the doors or steps up or down because they are older buildings. So I think, yeah, I guess, you know, you've got to be selective. You know, I can't get around everywhere where I live. But that said, because we are a major tourist destination, to be perfectly honest, I tend to go elsewhere when I want to enjoy some attractions, because it's
right.
incredibly, incredibly busy.
Yeah.
But I think attractions do very well at supplying accessibility information. Again, it's one of the sectors that we work with at AccessAble.
Mm.
And yeah, as a, you know, I can only speak for me personally, as I say, because I know that, you know, for sure, everybody has different requirements and things. But in general, I manage quite well in fractions.
You mentioned toilets in there. Sorry, it's a strange fascination of mine, but
we're all obsessed with toilets, aren't we, as wheelchair users?
Yeah. Now, I understand that in the UK, there's a special key that you have to use a toilet.
Yeah, so a radar key. Yeah.
Radar key, okay. And is that is available to anybody who needs it, or do you have to do some sort of registration? Or?
It's a very, very long time since I got mine, but I believe it's available to anybody who needs it. I know there's very, very different places that you can source them from. Okay. It's one of those things. I guess it's invaluable once you know about it.
If somebody was coming from, like, say, the States or another country where they don't have one of the keys, is it easy for them to get? I'd be concerned.
I believe that they can. So the organisation is Disability Rights UK.
Okay.
And I believe they can be purchased from their shop online.
Okay. That's
So yeah, I went out for the day shopping yesterday to one of the nearby cities, and you know the shopping centre, the toilets were all accessed via radar key. So it does become invaluable once you have it, really, and it also, I guess, cuts down on people using the toilets that don't need them,
right?
And you know, tries to keep the facilities clean and tidy and usable for everybody.
Okay. And the other one you mentioned, the changing places. Now, is that started in the UK or is that start somewhere else? Can you maybe sort of explain to people what the changing places toilet is?
Yeah. So I believe it's an initiative started in the UK. I don't know that there are very many of them outside of the UK. I've heard just recently that there's very few of them in the US, for instance. So a changing places toilet is a very, very large accessible toilet which has a hoist in the ceiling and an adult-sized changing bench. As well as, you know, the usual kind of accessible toilet facilities, so grab bars and that sort of thing, and possibly even some other things that I don't know about. I'm not a changing places expert, I'm afraid. But, you know, it's generally for people who have difficulty in transferring, for people who need support to change before or after toileting, that sort of thing. Because, you know, once I guess small children with those kinds of requirements grow up and get a bit bigger and things, it becomes a major challenge. The Changing Places campaign tells stories about, you know, parents having to change adult children in the backs of cars or on dirty toilet floors. So it's a campaign that's really really made a big difference as far as I can see in this country, and that is really continuing to try and change facilities in businesses for people who require this sort of thing. And I think, you know, I just think it's the right thing to do, because as I say, even though it's not something that that I require at this stage in my life, you know, who knows what's going to happen, you know. It's got to be beneficial for all of us, but in one time or another. So that's changing places in a nutshell, really.
Okay, thank you. What are your top three places for people who are maybe have never been to the UK but might want to go? I guess that's pretty subjective, isn't it? But
I think so. I mean, I touched on it before, but I love Manchester. I think it's a very accessible city. Much of Manchester was rebuilt in the 90s, so a lot of the centre of Manchester is very new, consequently making it very accessible and easy to get around. But I don't know if I'm a bit biased because I'm a northerner and it's my kind of my nearest large city. That might be it, really. I think everybody should experience London at least once in their life. I think it has its pros and its cons, its ups and its downs. But I think it's a truly kind of magical experience. I think, you know, to experience that buzz of the capital city and the many, many different walks of life within it is really special. You know, it's perhaps not the easiest place to get around if you've got extra requirements, but there's ways and means of doing it. And, you know, one of the things that I've done when I've travelled to London before is really just if we're there for a weekend, let's just focus on one area. You know, let's just see all of the different things that it is to see in this particular borough, for instance, right. You know, just to make it a bit more manageable. And then number three, I live in the Lake District, which, as I say, isn't the most accessible place at all, but it is stunningly, stunningly beautiful. You know, the countryside is amazing. That's not to say it's completely inaccessible. You know, I've lived here all my life, so there's ways of making it manageable, certainly. And there are a lot of accessible sort of trails and walks, you know, a lot more happening all the time. So they're trying to make certain parts of the countryside accessible for people who use wheelchairs to be able to get out and enjoy it. That's only really something I've got into in recent years since getting my new wheelchair and since getting a dog. Because obviously, you know, she loves to be out running around in the grass in the countryside. And I find it really, really kind of spiritual and calming. And you know, I think it's good for the soul. I guess it's not... it's not the most accessible place, but if you really want to do it and see it, it's definitely manageable. And again, I think it's somewhere that everybody should see at least once in their life.
Great. Okay, so I'm going to end off with some lightning round questions. On your personal bucket list of places you want to go, what are your top three places?
Oh, wow. Anywhere in the world. That's really difficult, isn't it? I guess one of them is Australia. So my best friend emigrated a few years ago. She lives in Perth in Western Australia. And the plan is to go and visit at some point. It's something that we haven't just quite got around to yet because it takes, you know, we're going to need a good 3 or 4 weeks of being free to be able to go and do it, I guess. Because it's such a long flight and that sort of thing, I would have to break the journey up and stop off somewhere halfway. I wouldn't manage the flight otherwise. But, you know, I'd say that's solidly, really, because it's where my friend lives, but also because that then gives me the opportunity to visit, you know, such a different country and culture. I would say one of the other things I really want to do, it's not necessarily a destination, more a mode of travel, but I'd really like to take a cruise. It's not something I've done up until now. I did a small taster cruise just in this country a few years ago when a new ship was launched. But, you know, I hear wonderful things about cruising from the accessible travel community. And, you know, actually, you know, you spend, you know, 10 minutes going through passport control and then you're on holiday, you know.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You don't have to worry about getting out of your wheelchair, getting your equipment damaged on a flight, you know. All of those anxieties that we were discussing earlier, because you're just on your holiday instantly, and it gives you the opportunity to visit a lot of different places in a short space of time.
Right. Okay.
And now I don't know how to pick a number three. I would like to explore the US. When I was a child, we just did the whole Disney thing a couple of times, and I think that's wonderful and it's magical. And you know, and I think accessibility is of a standard that I found really good for me. But it's not real, really, is it? You know, I'd like to explore and have some proper travel experiences on that side of the pond, I think.
Okay. Do you listen to a lot of music? Do you have any specific...
I my musical taste is quite old, I guess. Okay. So I listen to a lot of music that's sort of the era that I was growing up in. So the 90s predominantly.
Okay. Do you have any particular tunes you like to listen to when you're traveling? We have a Spotify playlist for this podcast. So I try to get people's top two or three songs and we add it to the playlist. So if you have any suggestions...
I, I guess I don't really listen to music a lot when I'm traveling. Music is really a home thing for me. So if I'm cooking, for instance, or if I'm doing the housework and things like that, I'll put some music on to keep me going.
Right.
Or if we're doing road trips, then we might have we'll probably just have Spotify on shuffle and have literally anything random coming out, because I like that. I like not knowing what to expect next.
Okay, it's a spice of life, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, well, just in the last then, how can people get in touch with you, Carrie-Anne? You online and?
Absolutely. So my website for my blog is carrieannelightly.com.
Okay.
And on there you can read all about my travels and my work and all the different things I'm doing. There's a contact page on there that has all of my social media links, my email, my contact details.
Okay.
And through there you can find me on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram. And then at AccessAble. So you can have a look at our new website, accessable.co.uk. Okay. You can download the AccessAble app from the App Store or the Google Play Store. And again, you can find all of our contact details and social links on our website.
Sounds great. Okay, I'll put those in the show notes as well, so people can get in contact. All right, thank you so much for your time. And you probably drank all your coffee through this, maybe you were speaking and you didn't get a chance to drink. So I hope you have a good coffee and a good productive work day today.
Thank you. It's been lovely chatting to you.
All right, it's been great talking to you too. All right.
Thanks. Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. I encourage you to check out Carrie-Anne Lightly's website, www.carrieannelightly.com, and you can find her links to Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook on there as well. You should also go and check out AccessAble on their website, accessable.co.uk, or find their mobile app online. Carrie-Anne is also on the Accessible Travel Forum. You too can join us on the Accessible Travel Forum, www.accessibletravelforum.com. The more users we have, the more useful the site will become. Be sure to ask questions and share your knowledge. You can also follow us on Twitter. Our username is @AccessibleTF. That's @AccessibleTF. Please subscribe to our podcast and share it with your friends. Do you have someone who might be interested in being interviewed? Do you want to be interviewed? If so, then please contact us at podcast@AccessibleTravelForum.com. That's podcast@AccessibleTravelForum.com. Keep enjoying your travels, and hopefully we'll bump into each other somewhere along the way. Until next time, I'm Josh, and this is Have Disability, We'll Travel.